You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover at the Final Four. This is Joe R. Lucas. After an emotional, incredible evening, what we witnessed last night was just absolutely amazing. Four teams that went at it head to head and took it down to the wire in both games. And man, I'm still jacked up. I think I slept for like 3 hours last night. I can't imagine what the players were doing. Let me first welcome my distinguished guest. I'll start as I'm looking at it. To my left, one of the best players of all time, a guy that to me was somebody that I looked up to. And David, it means you're a little bit older than I was, but I remember you at Notre Dame when I was playing. And I was one of those guys that grew up on NBC and the whole Notre Dame thing. And now the fact that this is 2 years in a row we've been able to do this together, I've gotten to meet you as far as the ambassadors are concerned. And it's just a pleasure to have you on the show. Mr. David Rivers, welcome, my man.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Good to be here with everyone.
Now on my bottom left is, this is going to be a tough one, but she's an incredible journalist right here in Belgrade, Serbia. And I'm looking forward to doing a podcast with her, hopefully in this next day or two that we've already talked about. She stepped up at the opening press conference and took the first two questions and kind of led the show from there. And she's going to help me with the last name because it's Miss Alexandra
Radivojević.
Radivojević.
Next life.
Yeah, next life, yeah. Someday we'll get that.
Thank you. Thank you for this. And thank you for having me. Actually, the story about us is about I was calling you to be my guest at my podcast, and now we're doing this. So I'm pretty honored. I'm pretty honored to be with you here, guys.
Well, I'm honored that you asked me to be on yours, too. And we're definitely going to make that happen, I promise you.
Thank you, Joe.
And then on, right underneath me, which is a guy that should be on top of me, there's no doubt about it. We should change this around a little bit because he's the man. One of my favorite people, one of my favorite coaches in the league, a guy that every time I get to speak with him, I just feel like he teaches me something new about the game, new about life in general. Andrea Trichetti, what is going on with you and your team? I want to start with you because you took Barcelona to the limit. What did you see in that series with you guys that led them to the Final Four? I mean, that series could have went either way. And I thought the job that you did was masterful in the playoffs.
First of all, thank you for having me here for such kind of event. It's always, you know, I would love to can talk to you about this event being there, but I went short one more time. So I don't know if I took Barcelona to the limit. I knew that I took my players over the limit. So I tried to squeeze them every drop of basketball they had. To tell you the truth, it's always sad when you lose a game five, but sadness was not my first feeling. We just went short of one big performance, La Provitola, and we did almost whatever we could. Sometimes it's not enough, and sometimes you have to go across the half court and congratulate the other team, because I believe that, if I'm not wrong, we won 14 out of 20 quarters in the series, 13 or 14. But the quarters Barcelona won were decisive. And the third quarter in game five was really a big, 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 big performance. And we could not survive.
You know, Coach, as an ex-player, I know you probably don't want to hear this right now, but as an ex-player sitting there watching the game, I love to see somebody step up and perform that way.
Me too. Me too.
You know, I know it's not what you want to hear, but it's so exciting as an ex-player to see somebody just say, I'm going to take this game over and actually do it.
It happens yesterday too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It is what it is about, this game. You know, some big player saying, okay, give me the ball. I'm going to do it. And the other guy was doing that, you know, the guy from Notre Dame was doing the same.
He used to dominate.
Yeah.
Let me get on to yesterday, because that's really what we're here for. Alexandra, which game was better?
Oof. That was a tough one.
That's why I gave you that. David, I told David that earlier. He's like, no, give that one to Alexandra.
Oh, that was you. Okay. Well, I will choose Olympiacos and Efes. I mean, it's not only about the basketball. I know that you guys will talk more about basketball terms. But for me, it also has that, media attention and media aspect that was maybe a little bit more interesting than with Real Madrid and Barcelona. We knew before the game what we can expect from El Clasico, and considering those games between those two big rivals during the season. But with Efes and Olympiacos, you know, the Greek fans and everything around them, and that self-confidence that Coach Ataman have during the whole season, but especially in playoff games and before this semifinals, and I suppose he will have more self-confidence for final game. So I think that game for me was a little bit more interesting, but, you know, it's hard to choose.
Yeah, Coach Adaman's not lacking self-confidence, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. David, it was interesting to me. Let's get a little bit more of a tactical part of that first game. It was interesting to me the way they played, because I did the questions at the end of the half. Olympiacos was so aggressive defensively, and they weren't getting turnovers, but they were getting deflections. They were getting their hands on a lot of balls, and it was kind of disrupting the rhythm of Efes' offense. And on the other hand, it was Coach Bartsokas who said, man, I'm going inside. Mustafa fall, Mustafa fall, Mustafa fall. So it was kind of like he had it going defensively and offensively. What did you think about the game plan? I thought it was a perfect game plan for Olympiacos.
Well, I thought it was too, and I was just happy that they started out so well. I think they really stifled Efes a little bit, but Shane Larkin's aggressiveness in the early stage kind of helped keep them in range. Nisus didn't play well, but the way Olympiacos started, I was happy about that. But, you know, this game is all about sustainability. Mm. And at the end of the day, you could just see them kind of level off, and Efes starts to make baskets and doing what they needed to do to keep it close. You know, watching the game, I just got the sense that Olympiacos could not afford to fall behind,
right,
because of Efes's, you know, scoring ability. And they kept it close. But I think Olympiacos just, they ran out of gas and they got a little tight down the stretch.
Andre, as a coach, and this is an advantage I think that Coach Ataman has, they looked terrible offensively in the first half. They really did. Like I said, they were just taken out of their time. It was more of a timing thing than it was the aggressiveness of Olympiacos' defense that caused the timing issues. But they have so many offensive weapons that even when you're not fluid offensively or consistent offensively, you got Larkin dropping a three, you got Eliza Bryant dropping a couple threes, and that just keeps you in the game. It's such a comfort zone as a coach, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know if it's a comfort zone. I know Ergin is a master, a Zen master in these things. And he knew, because the Final Four is always the same. You know, you go there and the players that perform are always the player that already been there in that situation. You see what a rookie game at the Final Four can cause you. It's a huge impact. You need at least three turns in Vietnam to be ready to play a Final Four according to your talent, okay?
Right.
Olympiacos is, to me, one of the, maybe the best defense to don't let you do what you like to do. It's not the big thing about tactics. It's banging you, hitting you, deflecting, playing big, having players that wants to sacrifice for the good of their defense, you know? And this is a very good base to start, play the game. And Elijah Bryant kept them alive on offense when they were like this, okay? because Vasa Mitic didn't play the best game of his season. He just made the best play of his season.
Right.
And Dunston was keeping them on defense and energy. Okay, so lacking some flashes, but he never took the game in his hands. Olympiacos up 5 points, then tied, then Efes up 10 points. You know, what I felt is the Vezenkov game was the thing that impacted negatively Olympiacos' hopes, because he was their leading scorer.
Right.
He played an amazing season. He was the best wing player of the entire EuroLeague. And when after the game, you go and you see the stat sheet, where is Vezenko?
Yeah.
And they needed another guy to pair with Dorsey, because Dorsey was the guy that gave them the chance to come back. But then these games are decided. You know how I believe that many coaches can say the same thing, and David maybe will say something about it. When you have to play a Final Four game, if you win individual matchups, you win the game. If you win the matchup on offense and defense with your man, you win the game. And at the end, Olympiacos won that individual matchup.
The Vezenkov thing is important because it's exactly what you say. The fact that Vezenkov wasn't there and Elijah Bryant was there was, you know, each star needs a supporting cast. And even exactly. though Vezenkov was a star this year during the season, he could have been that supporting cast because they went to fall often and very early in the game to try to open up the rest. Alexander, let's try to get into this last play because I'm anxious, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much we can break down in this game, and I'm going to talk to Coach about this and David also. But the last play, I'm going to ask you first, and I'm going to look at both of these other guys' reaction. Why are we shooting a three on the last play all the time? Does it have to be spectacular? All you needed was a two. All you needed to do is get fouled. But go ahead. I'm going to let you take it first.
Well, first, I need to say that I'm extremely proud of what Vasa did this season. And I'm sure that it wasn't his best game yesterday. Actually, it definitely wasn't the best day for Efes yesterday. I mean, when we talk about that. Only six players gave some shots in that team. But that's what you need for winning the trophy, right? To win the games, even on your bad days. I mean, you know, fake it till you make it, or how do you say it? And Vasa, he also didn't have the best day yesterday, but he made that last shot. And voila, Greek fans were totally and completely shocked. And he said after the game, it was the first time he actually made a shot for a win in his career in that way. So I guess, you know, it was his moment, his city, his country, he has a crowd, he has family near the court, and everything goes for him. I don't know. I mean, we all live for those shots, aren't we?
I just get the chills thinking about it, man. Because, you know, David, when we were growing up, we were at the playground playing. That was the only thing that was going through our mind, wasn't it?
That's it. That's it.
I mean, how many times did you do that and replay that in your head over and over again? And you don't get that opportunity, like Alexander said. You don't get that opportunity to do it very often.
Now, listen, I've only had that opportunity maybe once or twice in my entire career, dating back to high school. But you're exactly right, Joe. That's the image when you're in the playground by yourself, fantasizing about shots and moves, you know, scoring at the buzzer, counting it down in your mind and taking that shot. Mišić, he demonstrated what great players do in the biggest moments. Didn't have a fantastic game at all, which I think is going to be encouraging for FS for the championship game. But, you know, I got to look at it from Olympiacos' side. And Coach will relate to this. You know, seconds left to go. You know, the opponent's got the ball. You want to do everything you can to keep the ball out of the hands of certain players. And Mišić and Larkin are those players. And so I was a little baffled by, you know, just the ease of letting one of their key guys get that ball in the final seconds and just ISO, one-on-one. Listen, I'm Olympiacos, Red Lion all the way. But that, for me, I just kind of shook my head before the shot even went up.
Wow.
but how do you... I understand.
Coach.
I'm gonna let him answer that question, but I wanna add my two cents. It's my name is on the podcast, so.
Okay.
I feel
check your ego.
But when I say that, I feel like Coach Adamant. Hey, look, how do you have Larkin, you have Misic, you have Elijah Bryan who's having a game. David, how do you keep it out of their hands? I know they made it easy for them. They could have made it more difficult, taking some more time off the clock. But how do you keep it out of their hands?
You get up. They gotta beat you. They gotta beat you with a three, right? You get up. You are body to body, full deny. You are switching. You are doing everything you can possibly, other than using the officials to keep the ball out of those guys' hands. But you just don't let him get it and comfortably watch that clock and get in his position. Most players, when they get the ball and they're in an ISO position like that, if they're at the top of the key, they got all the options in the world. And if they're a talent like Misic and Larkin, you just put yourself in a disadvantage.
Coach, I was listening to the broadcast and the commentator mentioned that the possibility of, with 15 seconds, maybe fouling.
Okay, so let's go step by step, because David put a lot of things on the table, a lot.
Right.
And I like them, because this is the vision of a big player that was in that situation many times, with the ball or guarding the ball. So first of all, let's put on the side, Yorgos is a hell of a coach. He took his team one possession to make it to the final with a system. And their system is, we do what we do every day. And he is the coach of the year, fully deserve award. So whatever we are going to say, it's not relating to his coaching in this game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I was watching the game and I was thinking, okay, I have to play Larkin, Misic. Okay, it was 19 seconds, maybe 16, something like that. It's more than 14 because they take full court. Okay, and I said, okay, why not to foul them? Okay, and win or lose with my offense. Okay, and Misic just missed two free throws.
Exactly.
So, but this is, it's a thought that you have, in 10 seconds. And Olympiacos, they are proud of their defensive system. So this idea of fouling collides with their system, okay? We believe that we can stop anybody. So I was really considering to foul and to have the last offense, okay? Then second thing, how you want to die? You want to die with the best player, putting the dagger in your neck, or you want to make them do something else, okay? This is typical NBA way of thinking, Okay, if they have to win, they have to win with the third man, not with the one of the two, okay? Another thing, so the whole fourth quarter, Efes was playing target offense against Vezenkov, okay? And this is one of the things, because Vezenkov never had a good moment on offense, because he was putting to guard a screen, ball screen action every play, okay? So the last possession, you can choose to trap and to force a pass, knowing that maybe there will be an open shot, more open than the shot Misic took. This is something that you have to put in consideration. The other thing, you may take out Vezenkov and have a different defender there, maybe Papanikolaou, that is longer and more athletic. So there are many, many different things you can do. It's just to choose the right thing. And of course, now it's easy for us. Hey, I would foul, I would trap. Don't forget that Misic scored an unbelievable shot.
Unbelievable.
His hang time, when he jumped, He waited that his ankle start falling and then released the ball. Hey, this is something that only champions do.
Like you said, Coach, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You know, we all see everything perfectly the next day.
Yeah.
And my mind was, I thought when I saw the play on Instagram and everywhere now.
Yeah.
You saw a moment where you said that you thought that Sluk, I think it was Slukas who was on him at first, and Vasenko,
yes,
they were doing like a soft switch.
Yeah, because the screen was not a real screen. They could avoid the switch through.
And that's where I think they could have trapped and maybe caused the pass. And if you get that quicker shot, if they miss, you still have time offensively to get a shot. But the one that I loved about Olympiakos, and I'll finish this off with you, Alexander, is there was a moment where I was watching the stats, and they did, it's like you're saying, Coach, they did everything the way they've done it all season long. They had 9 people play in the game, and all 9 people scored, and this was in the beginning of the third quarter. They've done it as a team the whole year. Alexander, how difficult do you think that is for this team that brought 7,000, 8,000 fans here to do everything they've done all season long? And it comes down to one damn possession. And unfortunately, it looks like it's not a good season for them, even though, you know, deep down it is.
Yeah, well, I know how coaches feel when we journalists ask them questions like this. But I don't know. I already told you, I love the way Greek fans were cheering for the team. It's something familiar to us here in Belgrade because of Zvezda and Partizan. And I think for Olympiakos, Belgrade is the biggest and the best home court, but away in Europe. And I don't know, in a basketball terms, if you let me to speak about that a little bit, I know Mustafa Fall, for example, gave only, we can say only 7 points, I think, at the end of the game. But I think, for example, that he was giving that first momentum to the team, especially the first energy they needed, especially in the first half. And maybe I was expecting, when we talk about the key players and things like that individually, maybe I was expecting a little more from that duel between Tibor Pleiss and Mustafa Fall at the beginning of the game. And at the end, maybe Dunston was the bigger problem for Mustafa than Pleiss. I don't know what you think about that. I would like to hear a coach especially. And I don't know, I think Olympiakos had a great season anyway. I mean, that's just one play, one game. And I hope at the end of the tournament that Greek fans will stay in Belgrade till the last day.
I think so do we. Let's go to the next matchup. I'm gonna go straight to David. What the hell happened to Barcelona? Where did they go?
For me,
did they take themselves out of the game, David, or were they taken out of the game in your opinion?
No, I think they got fatigued.
Really?
I really think they got fatigued. There was an energy lapse down the stretch. For me, watching the Madrid-Barcelona game was like watching the first game. The interesting point, if you look at all 4 teams going into this Final Four, their average points per game, every single one of them are within 2 points of each other. So I knew it was going to be an exciting Final Four. But it just looked like, to me, Madrid made more stops down the stretch, big stops down the stretch, to give themselves opportunity. You just look at the big plays in the game. Madrid made more big plays, but I think Barcelona just kind of lost a little steam. That's what it looked like to me.
There was 4 minutes and 30 seconds to go in the third quarter, an immediate timeout, and Barcelona was up 9. And it was like Madrid came out of halftime and they couldn't make that run, that early run that we all like to make in a third quarter. And I looked at my co-commentator, Ron, and I said, Ron, I said, this is it. I said, Madrid has 4 minutes and 30 seconds to get themselves into this game, mentally and psychologically and physically. I said, if they don't do it now, it's over, because those 5 or 6 games that we all talked about, Barcelona dominating Madrid over the last season or two, don't come into play in these games until you see that you're being dominated again. And Coach, that those last 4 minutes of the third quarter was again, did Madrid take Barcelona out of the game? I'm going to pose the same question to you. Or did Barcelona kind of take themselves out of the game?
I always like to see a game or play a game or coach a game looking to the subplot. The subplot is what we players, coaches have in their head. So I believe that this game has roots that are very far from yesterday. So five games in this season, Barca won against Real with good margin, dominating the game. So this is a factor because you go to the game and say, okay, I won five times. I will win the sixth time. And in the other locker room, we say, oh, they're not going to beat us one more time, you know? And then you have a game that develops like every game with a stretch for Barca, then Real. And then when it comes that the game is on the line, I believe Real had more mental and physical energies. I'm talking about Coser and Poirier, okay? That made just plays that was that broke the emotional game of Barca, the mental, they enter in their head. I remember the 5 points Coser scored in 5 seconds with the 3-point shot and the steal. And for the first time, Pablo played with the athletic five players switching. So their best and most dominating big guy that is Tavares didn't play when it counts yesterday in order to win. And like this, I believe they took away all the problem they had with the pick and pop or big guys stretching the floor during the other five games of the season. And then they had more energy, more will, more desire. And it happens. I always say that the team that reaches the final four with the backpack of suffer and bad feelings, bad moment, has something more at the final four. Whoever comes to the final four gliding has something less.
I think that, like you were just saying, Coach, I think Pablo Laso was able to take away the physical part of the game by playing with a more of a finesse lineup yesterday, because physicality is where Madrid gets hurt against Barcelona.
Everybody got hurt. Saras put together the most physical team.
Exactly. They punish you offensively and they punish you defensively. And I think Pablo was able to take that away by putting in that smaller, quicker lineup. And that kind of took away from the game plan of Barcelona almost.
Definitely, yes, because who can say, oh, they will not play with Tavares, the clutch ball. Right. They found a way to be very efficient on defense, Real, switching. And they have always extra energy, extra athleticism on offense. And that was the key.
David, one of my favorite point guards ever. When I used to watch you play, you had a little bit more hair back then, but you're still one of my favorite point guards. I used to love watching you play. Williams Goss goes down in the first minute and a half of the game. I don't know what he has. I haven't heard yet. It looked like either a calf injury or hopefully not an Achilles tendon. Madrid doesn't have any point guards, man. They got rid of Ertel, even though he was on the bench with the team. How does a team do it? Because maybe back in our day, you could win a game without a true point guard. But in today's game, it's not easy. I mean, Madrid did a great job of being able to share the ball, distributed it, and get it up the floor without a true. Sergio, you've done a lot of point guard work over the last couple of years. It's kind of converted back and forth, but he's still not a true point guard.
No, he isn't, but he's more than enough. He's more than enough. If you look at today's game, and you know, Coach can speak to this as well. There's a lot of almost kind of positionless or multi-position type players in this game.
Right.
Sergio, all he has to do is get the ball up the floor, and then you have all those components coming into play. It's next man stepping up, essentially. This is the biggest moment, the biggest stage. You know, everything's on the line. You can't look at what you don't have. You focus on what you do have. And it's incumbent upon each player to recognize, hey, we're down one or two men short. We just got to go out and play. I like Madrid's aggressiveness. I like Sergio with the ball in his hand, getting it up the court, getting players in position. I think he will probably be more aggressive than he was last night.
David, you've played in games where a teammate's been hurt, went out, whatever. It's 2 seconds that you think about it. As soon as that ball goes back into play, you have no idea who's on that floor anymore. You're just out there with the other four people that you need to play with. And I'm sure that not at one moment those guys thought about Goss being in the locker room until after the game.
Right.
Again, Sergio, for some reason or another, and I think if Barcelona goes back and they look at this video, as most coaches would, he just kept getting into the lane on the left side of the basket. And I couldn't figure out why they were not. He shot a terrible percentage. He was 3 for 10 from the floor, but they were cleaning up offensive rebounds left and right because of his penetrations. I can't understand why someone didn't put a trap to stop him from getting into the lane. Because, you know, we all know that anybody gets in the lane, it just converges the defense. It collapses everything and opens up three-pointers. It opens up offensive rebounds. What could they have done better to keep Sergio out of that left side of the floor?
At the end of the day, it's a two-man job. You know, a player like that, a talent like that, you can even apply that to the Olympiacos FS game. It's going to always be a two-man job. You don't want to leave one defender to keep Sergio a little out of the paint. And listen, he missed a lot of those shots.
Exactly.
That won't happen again.
Right.
So that's going to create problems if he's making that shot, getting into the paint like that. But it's not a one-man job. It's a two, three-man job. Maybe switching on that guy to keep him out of those lanes.
Alexander, the end of the game is always interesting, where you see the coaches' reactions. Pablo was extremely, he's probably more emotion than I've ever seen out of Pablo Laso, because he felt the game was lost at one point or another. And I think Sardis was the opposite. Sardis was kind of cautiously optimistic throughout that game. But the different reactions of the coaches at the end of the game, I thought was really a big story. Did you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So for the whole game, actually, I like to watch coaches' reaction. I know what Mr. Trinchieri thinks about that, but I like to watch that.
Coach, we saw that face.
Actually, for Charles, I think he looks like he's always mad, you know. But with Pablo, is a different situation. Every time when he feels like he can lose the game or something is not so good in his team, like before the playoffs, I think they had a lot of problems inside the locker room. I think he gets mad after that, you know, and he is trying to put that reaction into the players and to help them to make the reaction for the rest of the season. And that was my question for him, actually, at the press conference before the semifinals. I was asking him about his decisions before the playoffs started. And at the end of the day, Real Madrid was the only team, of the first one who made it to the Final Four, and with 3-0 against Maccabi. So definitely he's doing a good job with his team. And also I need to agree with you about Williams Goss. And I hope that we will see him back on the court, maybe not on the Final Four, but for the end of the ACB League season. And I don't know, I mean for Charas also he reminds me of Željko a lot. I mean, it's a little bit logical with those two coaches, but I mean, Pablo and Charas, they're making a history, not only in Spanish basketball, but I think in the whole Europe. So it's always interesting to see them playing against each other. And maybe key players and the key things for Real Madrid for yesterday's game, I think Fabian Coser experiencing another youth in his career, and I would like to see him actually winning the MVP award, but we will have to wait for that a little bit more.
He constantly steps up in the Final Four. Coach, did you coach Fab? Just give me, before I ask you the question that I have for you, give me a quick rundown of him, because other than the fact that I just love him as a person, I'm close with him and his wife.
He's a great, great person, great family.
He doesn't care if he plays 2 minutes, if he plays 20 minutes.
No, he cares. Believe me, he cares.
Oh, no. I know deep down he cares. And his wife, Lucy, cares even more sometimes.
Even the dog cares, believe me.
Even the dogs care, exactly. But it's amazing. I think he's the ultimate team player in my mind.
No, he became that player.
He became that player.
Yeah, because he has the DNA. So I was always saying to him that his greatness is his stubbornness, okay? And everybody, even the dog, knows that he goes left, okay? But he still goes left. It's unbelievable, you know? I believe they put the bus, a tank, there against his left. He goes left, no matter what, you know? I remember another player like him was Keith Langford. Everybody knew he will go left, and he was still going left. So he's so stubborn in doing his game, and I love this because this gives him mental strength. He knows that he can deliver, and in big games, he always delivers. If you do remember when Real lost, I believe it was Vitoria, he was playing an amazing game, an amazing Final Four. So Fab is like this, you know, he's stubborn, but this is his greatness, and he delivers. This is the most important thing for a player.
And for a coach.
Yeah.
And for a coach, for sure. I think I'm going to lose my job someday commentating the games because I'm the same way, coach. I'm like, why do they keep letting him go left? Why?
Because he's able to do it.
It was like watching Manu Ginobili.
Yeah,
Ginobili was the same way. Ginobili,
almost impossible to keep him on the right.
My last question is for you, coach, before we get to the final. And maybe all three of you can jump in on this if you want. Unfortunately for you guys, now we have that interview at the end of the game for the losing coaches, which is never. And I think the interview that I watched yesterday with Sardis after the game was one of the most humbling moments that I've seen him in an interview. You know, he's like a Popovich interview. You never know what you're going to get from him, you know? And yesterday it was just like he had just thrown in the towel at that point. You know, it was over and there wasn't much he can do. I know me as a player, and I'm not sure about David, but I'm pretty positive that we share this feeling is you carry the losses with you in your life way more than you carry the big wins. And this looks like one that is going to affect him for a long time. And winning the EuroLeague is a process. And I don't care how you go about it. Not too many people do it the first time. Efes has had to go through the process. Schalke and Fenerbahce, they lost in the Final Four. They lost in the playoffs. They lost in the semis. They lost in the finals before they won. This is a process. Sardis doesn't have time for processes. He wants to win now because that's what he's used to. What do you see and what do you think? All three of you, I want you to jump in on this. What do you think's going through his head today? And how long is he going to take this with him?
First of all, the feeling after the game of a coach are something that I wish you would never feel, because either you win or you lose, you are a lonely person walking through an empty gym, 25,000 people, but it's empty. You are reviewing your game, okay? You are trying to find the right words to say, even if you won or lose the game to the team, because you want to link them to the next one, okay? This is not the last game of the season, okay? Maybe it's the last game of the EuroLeague, okay? But still, they have things to do together. So that interview is something of the most painful things after the game. I understand the showbiz. I understand everything. But expecting somebody to be able, or you don't say anything, and it's disrespectful towards the fan. So you say, yes, they won, they were better. Ciao, grazie. Okay? And of course, this is something the fans, or home don't want to hear, okay? I know Saras, I believe he made an unbelievable job again this season. He went short, okay? And today he will try to find a reason, and he will find a reason to be again Saras and to push their his team to the limit. This is our job, and we got to do what we have to do. So this is how it is. It's painful. There will be scars. Okay. Tomorrow's game is maybe the most painful thing they can have, especially when you are at the Final Four to win it and you don't play the final. But you said it the most, it's a process. It's a process. First, you need to lose in order to be able to win. Okay. But Saras doesn't want the process. Like he was a player.
None of us do.
No, he was one of the best players. So he skipped many, many steps. Okay. But believe me, he skipped that steps, not just because of his talent. He's one of the most hardworking coach out there.
David, do you share my feeling about the losses are stuck more in our memory than the wins?
Absolutely, absolutely. And knowing Saras as a player, all I can say is, you know, when you lose games like that, you know, typically you have all summer to use that loss as a fuel for the next season. But thank God, as Coach says, there are still more games to play. I don't know how coaches do it.
Bad.
But, you know, as a player, when you lose games like that, you know, you can go out and physically, you know, work and try to get better, get stuff out of your system. As a coach, you're going into some room, as Coach said, by yourself, alone, you know, hoping you're safe with your own thoughts in your head.
Exactly.
But Saras, listen, his drive is just going to be more intensified. And thank God there are more games to be played after this Turkish Airlines EuroLeague Final Four.
Alexander, as a journalist now, not as a coach and not as a player, but as a journalist, what did you see in that interview with Saras?
Yeah, well, I work for a media and I love my job, but I'm always on coaches and players' side. It sounds weird, but I'm not always for a show, you know. I'm more like, let that guy, you know, keep calm and go to recover by himself and everything. And especially for players, and we when we talk about those hard injuries and things like that, don't ask a player, is it an ACL right after the game? I mean, he doesn't know that and he doesn't feel to speak about that. And I'm always for coaches and for players' side. And you two guys, you're doing a great job with media sector in the EuroLeague, but sometimes we all try to, you know, copy the NBA and things like that. And I think we don't need to do that. You're doing a great job by yourself. So I enjoyed the whole EuroLeague family for media sector, and I'm doing this with love, but I don't like those situations. But for yesterday's Barcelona loss, I mean, it's a normal thing for tournaments like this. And you always want to, you know, see some reactions and emotions in front of the camera, and it's always good for a television, especially if it's in live and you're getting something, you know, exclusively for you, and it's always good. But let's make it to last a little bit shorter if we can.
All right, let's go to the final here. And Coach, I don't know if that was an indirect comment towards me the about Saras, that like I'm really not a journalist, and I skipped a lot of steps too, but I'm here anyways. She's really the real journalist here. I'm the one that just got lucky and skipped some steps. But I want to get to the final, because I think you only have like 10 minutes left before we have to let you go. So defense wins championships, right, Coach? Isn't that what they say? is that changing?
It's an old saying. It's changing. Defense allows you to play big plays on offense, win games.
Because the two defensive teams are not in the final.
Both teams would play defense tomorrow. And I would not.
Absolutely.
I would not underestimate FS defense.
No. They showed it against Milan.
I thought when Dunston made his fifth foul, was early in the fourth quarter, and that he is their defensive stopper. You can read protect the paint, and on pick and roll, he's a master. And I said, uh-oh, now Lucas will go to work, okay? And besides that layup of Hassan Martin at the end, Efes managed to be very, very efficient on defense. And because, you know, we are all focusing on Ergin, you know, what is around Ergin, but his team plays ball, both ends of court.
What do they have to do tomorrow? Because, I mean, they're missing one of the most important parts of their championship team, and that's Kronos Simon. And they did it without him yesterday. Mišić is a little bit touched up. Larkin is a little bit touched up. This is all about winning games when you're hurt also, and when you don't have your full team. What do they need to do tomorrow? What's the matchup that you're looking for between Madrid and Efes in the championship game?
Okay, it will be on one side, it will be the game of Larkin and Mišić. And they need a third man to step up. Yes, that was Bryant. Okay. It's still a game of things off the dribble, baskets off the dribble, Larkin, Mišić. And it will be interesting to see what Madrid will try to do, if they try to make the ball go from the hands of the two stars, or they're trying to rely on their size, because Real Madrid is the deepest roster according to size in the whole EuroLeague. They have very big bodies and they can cover the paint really, really well. And on the other end, on the other side, again, one game without a pure point guard, you can handle it, because he got injured in the game and the pulse of the player never goes under 150. So they don't have time to think, ooh, now we don't have our facilitator, okay? I always say that when the player is missing, it's like a cake, and everybody should take a slice of this cake, and we share the responsibilities of the missing player. But now they have to prepare a game without Gus. And, of course, Llull will be very important. And David said, why are they letting go left and score? The thing is that Llull is better to the right. So this is what big player does. He was able to score going to his weak hand. So, you know, these games are always something specific, something special. Players find energy and resources that you don't expect.
I'm going to step back to last year real quick for this year's matchup, David. Last year, Efes was up 2-0 on Madrid in the playoff, and they dominated Real Madrid at home. They went back to Madrid, and I remember this because I was commentating these games. Madrid went into like a matchup zone defense almost, where once Mišić or Larkin ended up with the ball in their hand at the point to go one-on-one, you saw the wing players and the big men stepping in one foot in the lane to kind of shut down that penetration, and they were giving the outside three. Sardis did the same thing to them in the finals in the beginning by putting Victor Claver up top in almost like a 3-2 extended zone defense. Is that something we'll see tomorrow from Pablo? Pablo comes up with these things every now and then.
Listen, I think that gives pause. You know, when you got two attackers like that and you're playing man-to-man and all of a sudden one of them gets the ball and you go to kind of a zone type setup, it basically gives the defense, time to adapt, because that player is going to look and think, oh, what are my other options? Versus, you know, them getting the ball, catching it, and just being able to attack right away. So it definitely will make those guys pause if that's the strategy used. But, Mišić is not going to play the way he did in the first game. I think he's going to have a better game. Larkin will continue to need to be aggressive, and everyone else will follow suit. Madrid, they got to be flying high. They got to be confident with the big stops that they got towards the end of the game against Barcelona. That's got to give them a ton of confidence going into the championship game. It's going to be fun to watch.
Alexandra, you've already predicted the MVP as being Fabian Coser, so I'm not going to make you do that. Yeah. I don't know if you predicted it or it's a desire of yours. I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, both of them. I think Fabian Coser played 4 years ago also the good tournament here in Belgrade, but yes. Real Madrid had Luka Doncic in his team still, so it was logical for MVP award to go to him. So maybe it's time for Coser now. Really?
I'm going to make you predict. You journalists always make us predict
yeah,
who's going to win. I'm supposed to ask everybody on the panel for a prediction, but I'm not going to do it to David. I'm not going to do it to coach. I'm putting all the pressure on you, unless they want to. But none of us like to predict anything. But I'm putting the pressure on you.
Before you put the pressure on me, I have to say that I predicted Barca and Olympiacos in finals. So,
you go, please. Take your stuff and leave the room. Come on.
No, that was not a prediction, actually. That was a little bit more of a desire. But in a basketball terms, yes, I think FS and Real Madrid was real for the finals. And now, I don't know, Fabian Coser for the MVP. And let's say Real Madrid for the champion. But before that, I'm going to say something about Ergin Ataman again. Last year in Cologne, he was talking about the fans from Turkey because they weren't there in that number that he expected because of the corona measures and everything. He repeated that strong message for all the Turkish fans out there. And I think that was the whole new story and new momentum for the team, the new energy, and that was the main motivation he prepared for the Final Four. And now he landed in Belgrade with a story about a thunderstorm because there was a thunderstorm in Belgrade the moment he landed with the team in the airport. And he told in front of the cameras, I think for the EuroLeague, that he came with a thunderstorm and he will go back with a thunderstorm and a trophy. So I don't know if we have to believe him, but on the other side, there is Pablo Laso, who I can describe as a sunny day if we talk about the thunderstorm on the other side. So it will be an interesting final for sure, as David said.
30 seconds for each one of you, David, and for Coach, and we'll get you out of here, Coach. Most important part of the game to win the game, what do you think is going to be the key to win the game for either one of these teams? Without a prediction, of course.
Rebounds.
The boards.
Who control the boards win the games.
I'm going to say turnovers, defense and turnovers. And I'll go out on a limb for fun. I take FS to repeat.
You take FS to repeat.
Yeah, I love the depth that Coach spoke of with Madrid. I love that depth, but I'm going to give FS an edge to repeat.
Coach, you're not going that way, are you?
No way.
That's the reason why you guys like to talk to me, because I understand you guys and I get it. Hey, to all three of you, it's so gratifying to be able to talk to you guys, to get so much knowledge from you, and to be able to even see the game in more of an open vision that I get to see it when I'm doing it, commentating it, and even learn more about what I witnessed the night before. So David, Alexandra, Andrea, Coach, you guys are great. Thank you so much for being on my show. And once again, have a great day. Coach, especially to you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Same here. Thank you, guys.
You're in the playoffs, so we wish you the best of luck also.
Thank you very much.
We want to see you back next season, wherever it is, but in one of these Final Fours.
Yes, and please, coach, help Joe to learn to pronounce my last name and give me a little bit of a native language. Kakuste.
Uživam.
Thank you.
Thank
guys.
You very much again.
Thank you.
Now you guys are taking over my show. See you.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover, or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.